Hello, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I take your questions through the app Call-In, C-A-L-L-I-N, and also some of them that you email me, freedom@charliekirk.com and AMA, but I actually talk to you. You guys can ask us questions through the Call-In app, so make sure you do that. Support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support, and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter or start a college chapter at tpusa.com and come to our Student Action Summit this Friday. If you don't have your tickets yet, go to tpusa.com and get your ticket. Maybe you live in Clearwater, maybe Orlando, maybe Jacksonville, maybe Tallahassee. Make the trip, everybody. It's going to be worth it. tpusa.com/SAS. Trump and DeSantis will be there with Turning Point Action. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Okay, we're trying the call-in thing, C-A-L-L-I-N.com, as a way that you can ask us questions. You want to take producer Andrew for the first question? Okay, we'll do producer Andrew for the inaugural question. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you, Charlie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Oh, hey, look at that. Charlie, what is the biggest difference you've noticed since becoming a TV host?
The biggest difference? Well, thank you, Andrew, for your question. Yeah, so look, I think the biggest difference would have to be, well, first of all, the expanded audience is great on Real America's Voice, which has been terrific. You just have to also be a little bit more presentable when you're just doing radio. You can kind of just roll in. And also, I've decided to retire the hat. We've decided to retire the hat, and I think it's gotten some great ratings from people, which is good. So, yeah, someone just emailed us, freedom@charliekirk.com. They said, yes, no more hat. Big fan of that. So, but also, I just enjoy it. It's another medium, another another way that we can communicate with our audience. Connor said, we'll make a commemorative box for you to put it in. Okay, Connor, we'll do that. So, okay, we will take one from the email queue right here. We got some really smart ones. Let's do this one here. That someone emailed freedom@charliekirk.com. So I mentioned the masks the other day, and this is a really smart question. So this is from Oliver. It's more of a comment, but I'm going to turn it into kind of a reaction to it. Charlie, you spoke the other day about young people being scared of COVID because you saw them voluntarily wearing masks. It's not fear of COVID. It's fear of not being seen as conforming. Young people don't want to stand out anymore, or they want to be seen as being a good Democrat. I also think they like covering their face as they are most likely to be very self-conscious. That's exactly right. It's super smart. I say this as a millennial who does not use social media. Or I guess it could be that they're all so dumb, they think cloth masks work. Oliver. I do want to expand on this, though, is that there are people that actually find comfort in having to cover up their face. There's people that find comfort in having to be not having to converse and having to show facial emotions. I am not a fan of masks for the same reason I'm not a fan of the Muslim veil. I think that it's dehumanizing. I think the Lord gave us a face for a reason. And especially for young children to be able to develop the necessary social cues. They say that 99% of communication is actually not in regards to the audible. It's also in regards to the facial, let's just say, responses and the intricacies of how we communicate visually and not just verbally. And the fact that most of the people wearing masks are young people, I think it's very telling for a generation that has been unnecessarily told to comply under the dogma and the regime of fear. But I think the self-conscious thing is very, very true. And I'm going to be developing a series of speeches and podcasts and articles that very well might turn into a book. I am more convinced than ever about the damage that these phones do to the development of a young mind. I want to just tell you right now that parents that give their kids phones, I think they have no idea that they are handing over potentially a form of digital heroin. I know that sounds controversial. It might sound inflammatory or, you know, over the top, but it's totally true. We have circuitry that was designed, I believe, by the Lord. You might believe it happened through an evolutionary process, but it's the same conclusion, that was designed for the wild. We were designed to survive in nature. We were designed to survive absent of technology. Now, praise God for technology. It can make our life a lot easier. We're talking right now, thanks to technology. But when you put a smartphone in front of an operating system, ourselves, that is designed to be in the natural world, then you are messing with fundamental neurology. And so what I think a lot of parents need to better understand, and there's some great books that articulate this, one that I just finished reading that is phenomenal, Comfort Crisis, Dopamine Nation, that talk about the erosion and the deterioration of young people's minds, which I believe directly plays into increased depression, suicide, anxiety, self-harm, medication, psychiatric drugs. I think 90% of it comes down to the digital pacifier in our right-hand pocket, the smartphone. It has become a mass coping mechanism. Boredom is a thing of the past. In fact, I'd love to get Michael Easter, the author of Comfort Crisis, on this program for a long-form conversation. It would be terrific. Okay, let's go to this one here. Charlie, the platforms have changed, declined actually. Do we keep voting for Republicans when we know they're, quote, Romney-flavored rhinos? What are the key differences between the parties or their platforms now? Idahoans are being drowned by rhinos. LDS religion dominates politics. They're committed globalists with a fierce control over their members. Julie, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think there's actually a big divide in the LDS community, just as there's a divide in American Christianity and in the Catholic community. I could say we have a lot of amazing LDS people that work for us here at Turning Point USA, and they tell us how awful and how terrible it is within the LDS church, and there's a divide there. The same way there's a divide within Presbyterians, there's a divide between Lutherans, there's a divide, I don't know if there's a divide in Episcopalians, I'm sure there's a small divide, small being very small percentage of people that want to stay conservative and the large that wants to stay liberal. But there's some phenomenal leaders that are LDS. For example, Andy Biggs. Andy Biggs is one of the most conservative members of Congress, and he's LDS, and he's been a phenomenal member of Congress. Whereas there's some not so, let's just say, favorable members of LDS church and politics, such as Jeff Flake and Mitt Romney. So I wouldn't paint that with the brush. I think that's a little unfair, stereotypically. I will say this, though. What is the difference between the parties? We need better people to run in the Republican Party, right? We need people like Blake Masters. We need people like J.D. Vance. And I do make the argument that we're going to have to hold our nose and suck up and vote for Republicans up and down the ballot. That's going to be something that I'm going to talk about getting closer to November. I'm one of the harshest critics of the Republican Party, but I still believe in the binary two-party system that it's much better to have Republicans in office and hold those Republicans accountable and get better Republicans elected than not have Republicans at all together. In Idaho, it's very difficult, though, Julie, to answer your question. It's a phenomenal point where you say you have Democrats that run as Republicans because of how conservative Idaho actually is. Great question. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Ironman thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now, ReliefFactor.com. You should order the three-week quick start too. Discount only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now. We have a question here from Albert. Albert, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you. So there's my question is that I'm aware that not so many people know that Russia and China are actually divorcing, and there are so many signs showing that. And nobody know that Ukrainian government, I'm not talking about the Ukrainian people, I'm talking about the government, has been a puppet of China for so long time. They refuse to condemn China over the genocide over Uyghurs. They refuse, almost all the edge-cutting technology, military technology, advanced armory from China, they all come from Ukraine. And Ukraine is the main door for China's One Belt One Road project to invade Europe and the Western sphere. So all the money that or any advanced military technologies that we give to the corrupt Ukrainian government, it can eventually go to China.
And what's the question? Really quick, sorry.
So what are we going to do with it? Because I also have another things to want to share just 30 minutes. Because actually I'm from Hong Kong and I just got asylum in Germany. And because I'm a leader of Hong Kong Independence, and we have the intelligence and information network that we just know that many communists know there will be no another 2 years for China, or there will be a very hard time for China. So they have to make sure that America cannot survive another 2 years of Biden manufactured disaster, or they will tell Joe Biden to destroy America.
Got it. Albert, thank you. So I think the question basically is about Russia and China. And look, Russia and China are actually not natural allies. They're both totalitarian dictatorships that want to try and reconquer lands that they believe are ethnically theirs. Now, Russia is no friend of the United States, but it doesn't have to be a bitter enemy. Russia very well should be in the neutral category. The same way that we used Russian power to defeat the Nazis, we should use Russian power to defeat the Chinese. The Chinese Communist Party and Russia, they're playing nice together, but they're not natural allies. You should always try to be dividing them apart from each other. Now, I believe that we must make the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government the clear and total enemy of the United States government. That's where we need to focus our attention and our time. Not on Russia, but instead the country that has well over a billion people, a growing economy, they're ruthless to the core, and they are really, quite honestly, ahead of pace in world domination. We have pushed Russia into closer CCP orbit due to bad Ukraine policy. And $56 billion spent on this. So I want to actually kind of tell you about one of my email exchanges I had here. And I respond to emails back and forth. Ron said this, Charlie, when mentioning evil in the world, you mentioned China and Iran. Why didn't you add Russia and North Korea? I commonly do, by the way. He says, quote, if deterring evil requires making evil fear and respect us, would letting Russia rape and pillage its neighbor help or hinder that goal? And I responded with, is Ukraine a state of the United States? Where is the $56 billion gone? What does success look like? And Ron said, well, the only thing that evil needs to prevail is for good men to stand down and let it have its way. The keys are to ensure the money we send to Ukraine gets put to its defense. Oh, so our government's going to magically be not corrupt and efficient? Deal in reality here. We're dealing with our federal government. Not what you want, but what actually happens. He said, quote, what would you rather your tax dollars go to other than Ukraine? I could list about 400 things off the top of my head. Poor southern border, helping families pay for bills, hedge against inflation. He said, there is no better use of money than the defense of Ukraine against a thieving, murderous thug. Again, Ukraine is not a state of the United States. It's not. Feel bad for the Ukrainian people. That is not an obligation of our country. We are crumbling from within. I asked what success was, and Ron said, success is for Russia to withdraw its military forces from Ukraine. Never going to happen because the eastern parts of Ukraine don't want them gone. They want to be under Russian governmental rule. They speak Russian. They're ethnically Russian. And I responded, what would I rather have the money to? How about stopping the 7,000-person daily invasion of our border? Also, just as a matter of principle, I don't think we should be funding Nazis that call themselves the Azov Battalion in southeastern Ukraine. Look, as you know, our friend Mike Lindell has amazing passion, and especially has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll save $90 on a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop this. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoors, out all day long, made with My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, made with quality leather suede. Call 800-875-0425 or click on promo code Kirk or MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. This offer will not last long, so order now with promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. Let's get to our next question from Colin. It's Khalil from Colin. You're up. Please unmute yourself before asking your question. Khalil, what is your question?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How you doing? Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. What's your question?
I'm doing great. I wanted to preface my question with a quote from Dr. William Lane Craig. It's about Christianity. If God does not exist, then life is futile. If the God of the Bible does exist, then life is meaningful. Only the second of these two alternatives enables us to live happily and consistently. Therefore, it seems to me that even if the evidence for these two options were absolutely equal, a rational person ought to choose biblical Christianity. It seems to me positively irrational to prefer death, futility, and destruction to life, meaningfulness, and happiness. As Blaise Pascal said, we have nothing to lose and infinity to gain. So I want to ask you, as a Christian, how can Christians appeal to non-believers on the evidence supporting the life of Jesus of Nazareth and open the doors to their hearts of balancing faith?
Ooh, I think we lost Khalil. Okay, I think he was going to ask about the idea of faith and knowledge and spiritual belief in him. Great question, Khalil. I'm sorry we dropped you there. So look, I speak openly about my faith, and I encourage any of you that have questions about that to go to your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and listen to our conversation with Frank Turek. And I boil it down to two things. And I got this from Frank Turek, and I got it from many other apologists as well, which is you just have to ask two very basic questions of non-believers, which is, if God created the heavens and the earth and Jesus Christ rose from the dead, then those two things should dictate your entire religious view, period. And there are four questions that we need to ask about whether or not you believe Christianity is true. Does truth exist? Does God exist? Are miracles real? And is the New Testament reliable? Those are the four questions that you need to ask. Now, if they say that truth does not exist, then you should ask them in response, is that true? Is it true that there is no truth? Because if it's true that there is no truth, then the claim that there is no truth can't be true, and it claims to be true. For the second part about there being a God, you can use the cosmological design and moral arguments. For example, that we know that the universe began with a big bang. Even atheists admit that. You know, Stephen Hawking, the most famous physicist on the planet, is an atheist. And he said, quote, today, almost everyone now believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning at the Big Bang. But Hawkins actually had a different explanation than that for the beginning of the universe. And he fails desperately with this because he ends up admitting the data that space, time, and matter had a beginning out of nothing. So the scientific evidence for design was the second evidence for God, and particularly the fine-tuning of the universe. So if you change, for example, the expansion rate, that infinitesimal amount from the very beginning that there is no universe, you can't make any evolutionary argument from this. You can't say the expansion rate evolved to this point. Why? Because those initial things are the conditions for the universe. So it's rational and reasonable to believe that the same spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent being that created the universe is the same being that created the expansion rate to be precisely what it is right now. And by the way, we could also talk about morals. I mean, if you do not believe in a higher spiritual being, then your definition of right and wrong is merely an opinion from things like rape, slavery, Holocaust, sexual abuse, arson. It's nothing more than an opinion. So also, you can ask the question about miracles. So look, the greatest miracle in the entire Bible is the first verse. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That right there is a miracle. Our existence is a miracle. Our consciousness is a miracle. The fact that we have breath and we have our ability to choose freely, which I do believe we have that ability, is a miracle. It's an incredible thing. And then finally, is the New Testament reliable? From an archaeological standpoint and a historical text standpoint, the New Testament is remarkably reliable. It is the most reliable ancient document in history, period. More original source documents, closer to the actual events when they happen, more eyewitnesses, and more archaeological evidence has been discovered that reaffirms the New Testament. I'm just talking about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the letters of Paul, James, and Peter. There is more reliability there. And there are some questions that atheists and non-believers have to wrestle with, which is, if Jesus did not rise from the dead, then what happened to his body? They say, well, it was stolen. Then how'd they get through the Roman centurion guards? Well, they said, well, the Roman centurion guards were asleep, and then they rolled the boulder over. Well, that boulder, according to historical estimates, very well could have been between 1 to 2 tons. And if you fell asleep as a Roman centurion guard, it was a punishable offense by death. And how do you know what happened then if the Roman centurion guards fell asleep? Who stole the body and for what purpose? Well, they say, well, the disciples obviously stole the body. Okay, so they stole the body so then they could then go be chased around the Middle East and all be crucified, some upside down at death. Let me get this straight. So they plotted their own conspiracy to believe something fake and false so they all could die a sufferable death for that lie that they then created. That doesn't sound very logical. So you have to explain it for some way. Also explain that if you were to create a lie in like first century Jerusalem, why would you have female witnesses at the time of Jesus? Females did not have the type of standing in court, and their witness was not considered to be equal to that of a man. So if you were to create a vast conspiracy of stealing a body of someone who was just sentenced to death by Pilate, pushed forward by the Pharisees, why on earth would you have the least reliable witnesses you could possibly find, also known as women? How do you explain that the skeptics, such as Thomas, Peter, and the half-brother of Jesus, James, went from people that were disinterested skeptics mourning the death of Jesus, I want to say disinterested, but not exactly motivated, to all of a sudden so enthusiastic they spread across the known world and all died deaths of martyrdom for what they knew was true? Who would do that for a lie? And then finally, the story of Paul. How do you explain that? A Jewish, wealthy, Roman, he engaged in massacres. What exactly was the incentive structure for Paul to go from wealthy, Jewish, Roman to someone that all of a sudden went to the great theologian and church builder and communicator? Maybe he actually did have a divine interaction in that road to Emmaus. Maybe he did. These are all questions that need to be answered, and skeptics have a hard time going through it. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which I think are called the synoptic gospels, if I'm not mistaken, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the three, they have zero contradictions. They all say the same thing from different angles, and John reaffirms them from a separate perspective. And then finally, you have to explain Luke, a doctor sponsored by Theophilus, which literally means lover of God, who goes about in almost a nonpartisan, non-religious, non-theological way, factually writing these letters back to his sponsor, Theophilus, and documenting the Acts of the Apostles. These are all things that must be asked. So I encourage a skeptic to come on and ask those questions on a college campus or wherever. We can have a conversation on it. And by the way, almost all of that knowledge derived from the phenomenal teaching and mentorship and friendship of the great Frank Turek. He's a treasure to all of us. You guys should check out his ministry, crossexamine.org. He's phenomenal. Okay, let's get to the next question. Mike is next. Mike, please unmute yourself. He's already unmuted. Amazing. Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, thank you, Charlie, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to ask some questions. I'm just looking at the next election and all the preparation that appears to be occurring at once. The preparation for another lockdown, which means mail-in ballots, Dominion machines, etc. And I don't see the Republicans really actively fighting this or fighting to win. And just curious as to your recommendations for what we might do to kind of combat that.
What state do you live in, Mike? Sorry.
I used to live in Scottsdale, but now I'm in Clearwater, Florida.
Smart man. Well, we're holding down the fort here in Arizona. Well, Mike, you are in a great spot in Florida because you have great leadership in Florida. Ron DeSantis made quick work out of getting rid of the kind of mass mail-in balloting scheme that existed in Florida. Ron DeSantis did a phenomenal job of that. You might remember Brenda Snipes was in charge of Broward County and ran a much cleaner and clearer election in 2020 than what happened in Arizona. There's one thing we must do. We must take a rule from Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and keep the pressure on. We have to keep the relentless pressure on our lawmakers nonstop to make sure that they reform our elections and that we do not let them go. We have to have them say, stop bothering me so much, I'm finally going to do it. Good, you've done your job. We must be peaceful, we must be respectful, we must be direct, we must pressure the rhinos. This is something that we're going to start doing, by the way, at Turning Point Action, led by the great Tyler Boyer, where we are going to have the Keep the Pressure On Project, otherwise known as the Town Hall Project, that once we go take back the House and the Senate, God willing, in this November, we're going to start showing up to town hall meetings time and time again to Republicans and ask the question, what are you doing? Why are you not doing this? Why are you not mentioning Davos? Why are you mentioning this? One after the other, especially on the state level. They need to be held accountable. And the best way to do that is to look at them directly in the eyes and say, you are not representing me. You are not faithfully executing your oath. They don't get that kind of pressure enough. It has to be respectful, has to be direct, but it also has to be truthful and, of course, peaceful, as I mentioned. All right, everybody, I need to address a little bit of a, let's just say, it was a mistake that I made. But by addressing the mistake, I think it's going to be somewhat helpful. So I had this whole dialogue against Professor Miranda Yeaver or whatever from Wheaton College. And I totally admit I made the mistake. I guess there's two Wheaton Colleges. There's one in Massachusetts, and there is one in Illinois. And so the one in Massachusetts is a private liberal arts college that was founded as a female seminary and has now changed dramatically. And the fact that there's two Wheaton Colleges is just kind of interesting to me. Now, I will say this, though, is that this does present an opportunity to talk about how, yes, I was attacking Wheaton College in Massachusetts, but Wheaton in Illinois is not exactly blameless. Their Wheaton College in Illinois is where Billy Graham went to school, for example. And wokeism is infecting Wheaton College in Illinois top to bottom. And just in a little bit of research, I found one piece of evidence after the other. For example, this is from the Illinois Family Institute, illinoisfamily.org. The esteemed evangelical Christian Wheaton College is really woking up. The administration has decided to remove a plaque honoring Wheaton alumni and missionaries because it described them as savage, the indigenous Ecuadorian tribe that brutally and without cause spread Elliot, McCulley, and three other missionaries to death in 1956. So these are missionaries that went down to Ecuador. They had a plaque for that. They called them savage because they got murdered for going down there, and Wheaton College removes the plaque because of insensitivities to indigenous cultures, even though these people are heroes for going down there. And it doesn't stop there. Wheaton College has one diversity, equity, I'm talking Wheaton College in Illinois, piece of example after the other. For example, they have an Office of Multicultural Development at Wheaton College in Illinois. Has a strong legacy of supporting students of color and encouraging our community towards diversity and Christian unity. What? That's like saying I'm working very hard to be dry while wet. I'm working very hard to be full while hungry. You can't have diversity and Christian unity. It's completely contradictory. The Office of Multicultural Development at Wheaton began during the 1970s. Since then, the department has gone through a lot of changes, including multiple names. The Office of Minority Affairs, the Office of Minority Student Development, the Office of Multicultural Development. They want to have people be able to engage with differences and conflict in a way that still says we're doing this as men of women and of God. Part of being part of the body of Christ is understand what grace is. Grace says that we have to be patient with one another. We spend time with one another. We are preparing young men and women to know how to address that outside of Wheaton and how to be engaged with people with different and conflict in ways, still doing it a way as men of God. So then why do you have an entire department based on racial differences? It's incredibly racist to do that. It's playing straight into critical race theory, playing straight into theory, straight into Marxist conflict theory. In 2013, the Office of Multicultural Diversity was created at the lower level of the Beeman Center to get a snack, a cup of coffee, and a chance to reflect on our identity as it relates to ethnicity and culture. This is a Christian school that wants students to reflect on their race. It's a place to interact with people of diverse backgrounds and together work through questions of what it means to live as people of God. How about this? Don't talk about race, because God doesn't care about race. So why does Wheaton College care about it? Now, I interacted back and forth. I was a little spicy in my emails. I fully admit it. And someone says, look, they're actually working internally. There's a war in Wheaton to try to reaffirm their statement and try to go against this wokeism, Wheaton College in Illinois. I'm pleased to hear that. So I want to make sure I'm very fair in how it's not like all of Wheaton's on board for this. And by the way, that's just one example of several of where Wheaton has gone completely and totally woke. Wokeism is impacting religion, as the California Conference in Illinois just dropped a bill that could legalize infanticide, drops opposition to the bill that could legalize infanticide. And so I am going to be a little bit intense and a little bit harsh, I'll be honest, with the once great Wheaton College in Illinois that's entertaining, for example, a religious ceremony where they had the inaugural racialized minorities recognition ceremony with Dr. Sheila Caldwell. What is Wheaton doing? I pray that the alumni of Wheaton and the good people at Wheaton, because I know there's still a lot of them, they excommunicate this anti-biblical, anti-American ideology that has infected Wheaton in Illinois top to bottom. So I'm glad I clarified that. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.